Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
If any of you, I know some of you do, but maybe hang out on our Facebook page. You've probably seen the guy complaining that our episode on Calamity Jane is inaccurate.
That episode that doesn't exist.
We don't have a Calamity Jane episode. So we're fixing that today. We're pretty sure that guy on Facebook is actually complaining about a video that we shared that neither of us is in that doesn't say Stuff You Missed in History Class on it. But, you know, he's basically the reason why we're doing a Calamity Jane episode today.
Also because she's fascinating.
Also because she is fascinating. And the other thing is the guy who gave us a 1-star iTunes review for talking about too many women, when at that point less than a quarter of the women in, or less than a quarter of the most recent episodes were about women, that guy gets partial credit for our recent uptick in women, because less than 20% of women is the opposite of too many women. So we're fixing that balance a little bit right now.
Apparently it's too many for him.
Yeah.
But it's not a good representation of humankind or history.
Now, my favorite response in that whole discussion was when I pointed out that only 5 of the last 20 episodes had been about women, and one of the women was a saponified corpse.
Right.
And somebody responded and said, I think saponified corpses are overrepresented in the podcast. It was fantastic. Anyway, Calamity Jane.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about her. Calamity Jane's grandparents were farmers who lived in Ohio, not far from the border with West Virginia. In the 1850s, her grandfather, James Canary, started selling off the family's land in preparation for a move west. First, he and several of his children and their families moved to Polk County, Iowa.
One of these children was his son, Robert, who married Charlotte Burge in Iowa on June 14, 1855. He was 30 at that time and she was 15. About a year later, on May 1st, 1856, they had a daughter named Martha Jane Canary, who would later grow up to be Calamity Jane. Calamity Jane would eventually have at least 3 siblings, possibly others who didn't survive childhood, but we only have a lot of information about really 2 of them, who we'll talk about in a bit.
Just before the future Calamity Jane was born, James Canary resettled the family a second time, this time to Mercer County, Missouri. He bought a bunch of land for less than he sold the Iowa land for, and then he turned around and sold it to his children for a steep discount. Once again, most of the extended Canary family lived near to one another.
Calamity's parents really made, and we are going to call her Calamity this whole episode, because that's fun to say. Calamity's parents really made an impression on the residents of Mercer County. Charlotte Canary in particular was remembered for being the cigar-smoking, foul-mouthed woman who was known to get drunk in public and wear really flamboyant clothing. Robert, on the other hand, was remembered for being kind of lazy, and people looked down on him for not being able to, quote, control his wife. Plus, he allowed her to browbeat him for not being a very good husband or provider. So they made an impression.
In 1862, James Canary, who had apparently been living with Robert, Charlotte, and their children since the death of his wife sometime before, also died. Shortly thereafter, when Calamity was 6 or 7, Robert sold the farm and the family moved again, this time away from the rest of the Canaries. And it's a little unclear as to why, although two prevailing theories are the Civil War and the need to dodge some issues with the late James Canary's estate.
Yeah, it seems like Robert pretty much withheld something from James Canary's estate that he needed to hand back over to then be divided up among his heirs, and instead he moved away. From Ohio, the family went west, and they eventually wound up in Blackfoot City, Montana, in December of 1864. That winter was a really hard one, and a lot of settlements in Montana were straining under a huge influx of people who had moved west basically all at once. A story in the Montana Post, which came out on December 31st of that year, talked about three children who were begging for aid from one of the commissioners of Madison County, Montana. The article described their mother as, quote, a woman of the lowest grade and their father as a gambler. The children in this story gave their last name as Canary, and most historians believe that this news article was about Calamity Jane's family.
It's not exactly clear what led the family to fall in these hard times, but things only got worse from there. Charlotte died in 1866. Then Robert reportedly took the children south, having heard that the Mormons would take in and care for needy children. Unfortunately, he also died in 1867 somewhere near Salt Lake City.
Calamity at this point was about 11, and as the oldest, she needed to take care of her surviving younger siblings. According to her nephew, she arranged homes for her sister Lena and her brother Elijah, who was known as Lige. Lena later went on to marry a farmer, and she had seven children that then died in a farming accident in 1888. Lige became an itinerant farmhand, including at some points in places where Calamity also lived, and he did spend some time in prison.
Sometime between the death of her father and the summer of 1869, Calamity Jane made her way to Piedmont, Wyoming, which we know from census records, on which she listed her age as 15, not 13. From there, the age she told people is consistently different from her age the first time her parents reported her on the census.
She consistently told people she was older than she actually was, according to census records. Piedmont was one of the many towns that had sprung up along the Transcontinental Railroad as it was being built. It had about 100 residents at this point, and most of them were male laborers. By the time of the 1869 census, most of its buildings had recently been upgraded from tents to shacks.
In Piedmont, Calamity lived and worked at a boarding house, and she sometimes earned money as sort of an in-house babysitter. However, Calamity Jane bucked expectations for what a 15-year-old girl should be like. She flirted, and she danced with soldiers who came through the area. She cross-dressed in soldiers' clothing. Her behavior was considered to be wild, so much so that she was fired from the boarding house, and Emma Alton, its owner, insisted later that she'd had nothing at all to do with Calamity Jane, in spite of many witness reports to the contrary.
We're not sure exactly how long Calamity Jane stayed in Piedmont or exactly where she went when she left. It's not really in the newspapers or census reports in 1870, and various other accounts, like interviews people gave later, contradict one another. It's really the early 1870s before there were reliable reports on her whereabouts. We have kind of a general sense that she traveled from one Wyoming boomtown to another, finding work where she could, doing anything from odd jobs to almost certainly prostitution. There's a brief gap here in what we know about Calamity Jane's story, so we're going to take a brief pause and have a word from one of the sponsors who helps keep our show going. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Calamity Jane, still known as Martha Jane Canary, traveled around various Wyoming frontier settlements in the late 1860s and early 1870s. She made a number of short stays in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and traveled back and forth between there and the nearby forts of Laramie and Russell, working as both an entertainer and a prostitute.
The first written account that we have of Calamity Jane that's actually substantiated by multiple sources, and is also when she became known as Calamity, is from her time in the Black Hills in Dakota Territory. And to talk about that part of her life, we're going to need to set the stage a little bit.
The Black Hills of South Dakota had been set aside as part of a reservation for the Sioux Nation and the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868. According to the terms of this treaty, fighting between the U.S. Army and the Sioux Nation was going to end, and the Sioux would have exclusive rights to the Black Hills, which were and are sacred to the Sioux.
However, In 1874, in defiance of the treaty's terms, General George Custer led an expedition through the Black Hills to look for gold, and found it. Word spread, leading to a gold rush, and the miners and prospectors who flooded the area demanded that the U.S. Army protect them from the native population, even though they were all there illegally.
As the government started to waffle on upholding the terms of the treaty and instead protecting non-native miners and prospectors from the Native Americans, the Office of Indian Affairs and the Department of War sponsored the Newton-Jenny Expedition into the Black Hills. This 1875 expedition was meant to survey the area and to evaluate the reports of mineral deposits that were there. This expedition departed on May 25th, 1875, and Calamity Jane tagged along.
This is where real written documentation of Calamity Jane's life, rather than just things gleaned mostly from census records and interviews conducted much later, really gets started. Three different writers chronicling the expedition not only talked about Calamity Jane, but also called her by that name. So it's clear that Martha became known as Calamity either before or very early in the process of this expedition. She became so consistently known as Calamity that it wasn't until later historians pieced her story together that people actually figured out that she had once been called Martha.
Calamity seems to have joined this expedition in disguise after asking both Colonel Dodge, who was commanding it, and the doctor, who was going to be in charge of medical services for the expedition, if she could come along. Both of them told her no, so she disguised herself as a soldier. Unfortunately, this disguise is reportedly what got her discovered. She saluted an officer who returned her salute, and the soldiers who were standing around and knew what was up started laughing about it. When they were made to explain themselves, the officer was quite angry and threw her out of the expedition.
But at this point, they were more than 60 miles away from the fort. Calamity Jane was certainly resourceful. She was now 19 years old, and she'd been essentially living on her own since she was 11. But this wasn't something she could easily survive on her own. She was in understandably hostile territory.
The written accounts of the expedition do vary a little on exactly what Jane did at this point. Whether she kept sneaking back in dressed as a soldier and falling in with men who were sympathetic to her, or whether she rode along with the Teamsters instead of with the soldiers, or some of both. Either way, the expedition doctor described her as, quote, crazy for adventure.
It's not entirely clear whether Calamity stayed with the expedition throughout its entirety, but afterward, the U.S. ordered that all Native peoples in the area in and around the Black Hills needed to move to a reservation or be considered hostiles. Many refused, and the Army began sending troops to round people up and move them by force. General George Crook commanded one of the units being assigned this task, and on March 1st of 1876, he departed Fort Fetterman, which was about 80 miles northwest of Fort Laramie. His force included nearly 900 men. And Calamity Jane.
Calamity Jane's own account of this expedition is highly, highly embellished. And in all likelihood, she came along as either a teamster or a prostitute or just a camp follower. However, this expedition went terribly. The weather was awful the whole time, and they had an encounter with the Cheyenne that went so badly that Crook wound up filing charges against one of his officers once it was all over.
Reports place Calamity all over the general area following the failed expedition, often driving teams of animals and dressed in clothing more associated with men. People described her as tough and brave, and she developed a reputation for being an excellent shot.
In May of 1876, Calamity, having given a false name in the matter, was indicted in Laramie County for stealing a bundle of clothing and other personal items. She was temporarily put in jail before being declared not guilty and freed. Reportedly, she celebrated her freedom by riding a horse all the way to Fort Laramie, which was 90 miles past her intended destination of Fort Russell, drinking heavily the entire way.
Which might explain the whoopsie-daisy in where she landed.
Right.
The next month, she joined up with General Crook again on another mission to try to round up Sioux resistance, this time falling in with them after their departure, dressed as a man and working as a teamster. When she was discovered, she was arrested. She was given woman's clothing to wear and kept guard until they were back in town. Her own version of this story is that she was a scout for General Crook, but that can't be substantiated. And after her death, Captain Jack Crawford, who was also part of the mission, flatly dismissed it.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about Comfort Hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
This next phase of Calamity Jane's life is by far the most famous and notorious. In June of 1876, she met up with James Butler Hickok, also known as Wild Bill, and Charles Utter, known as Colorado Charlie. They were on their way from Cheyenne to Deadwood. They made a number of stops, including outside of Fort Laramie, where about 30 wagons and roughly 100 people were waiting to join them.
Calamity Jane joined as well, after the officer of the day at Fort Laramie asked them to please take her off his hands. She was being detained there, and she was quite drunk. Fortunately, Steve Utter, brother to Colorado Charlie, knew Calamity, and he said that he would take care of her.
She spent a lot of this journey drinking and entertaining the travelers with really tall tales about her exploits around the campfire. These were peppered with lots of profanity. They finally arrived in Deadwood around July 12th, and they paraded into town with Wild Bill, Colorado Charlie, Calamity, and the others closest to them, so their little clique, all wearing new buckskin clothes just covered in fringe.
Calamity had actually borrowed the money to buy hers because she didn't have any money of her own. A day later, the Black Hills Pioneer, which was one of the two newspapers that had been launched in Deadwood, proclaimed, Calamity Jane has arrived.
Like many of the other places Calamity had lived previously, Deadwood was a boomtown whose population was surging as the result of a gold rush. When Wild Bill's party arrived, it was still mostly a collection of tents, with only a few solid buildings constructed at this point. It was also wild and virtually lawless. Saloons and theaters provided much of the town's entertainment, and Calamity found work as a hostess and dancer. She soon repaid the money that she had borrowed to purchase her buckskins.
She also, contrary to the pictures that are almost invariably used to represent her, often dressed in more typical feminine clothing. There are more than 20 photos of Calamity Jane that still exist, and she's wearing clothing more typical for a man in only 6 of them. But those 6 are the ones that are most widely used and most widely available. So they are almost always the ones that wind up in articles and on covers of books and things like that. Though they will also be on our website because I can only find one of her in a dress.
Well, and they are quite striking.
Yeah.
She cuts a dashing figure. You can feel attitude coming off her in those pictures. I love it. Although Wild Bill and Calamity Jane are often presented in novels and movies as a couple, there's really nothing to substantiate that. Calamity herself never claimed that they were romantically involved, and most of the other accounts of Deadwood agree that they weren't seen together very often. When Wild Bill was murdered on August 2nd of 1876, they had been in Deadwood for less than a month, and they'd known one another for only about 6 weeks.
Calamity stayed in Deadwood for 2 or 3 years, finding steady work in Deadwood's dance halls, where she did lots of dancing and lots of drinking, and really stood up for herself in an environment that could frankly be very dangerous for the women who were working there.
One of these places was the notorious Den of Iniquity, the Gem Variety Theater, managed by Al Swearingen, who we discussed in a previous two-parter. She worked as a dancer, a hostess, and a recruiter, traveling to other towns to bring prostitutes back to the gem.
I tried to find out more information about whether that recruitment was really on the up and up, and I could not.
Yeah, we talked about some of Al Swearingen's practices where he would go and, like, make promises of, like, no, you're going to be a dancer and a star, and then they would get back and it was kind of like
they had basically
prostitution enslavement.
Yeah.
But we didn't connect whether or not Jane was on those particular recruitment missions or
right.
not.
I really wanted to. It's one of those things that I really wanted to resolve for my own peace of mind, and I could not. Although she's most famous for rowdy, bawdy, tough behavior, Calamity Jane also worked as a nurse in Deadwood and some of the other places where she lived. She gained a reputation for having a good heart and for always being willing to help somebody who was sick or hurt. This included during a smallpox outbreak in 1878 when she worked at a pest house that had been set up to quarantine the sick. She looked after patients who were so sick that nobody else would go near them.
In the late 1870s, Calamity Jane became famous beyond just the area of the Black Hills. Local newspapers had been covering her exploits for quite some time, but people began writing biographies about her while she was still living, and she became a character in dozens of dime novels. One such series were the Deadwood Dick books, one of which is called Deadwood Dick on Deck, or Calamity Jane, the Heroine of Whoop Up.
I love that title. There are dozens is not an exaggeration. She is a character in dozens and dozens of cheap novels that came out around this point. And so a lot of people became more familiar with her as this fictional sidekick, Wild West, like, quote, cowboys and Indians kind of character than the actual person.
Right. Her caricature kind of superseded the reality of her life.
Yeah. She left Deadwood in the early 1880s, and she continued to travel and explore, following the railroad to different parts of the frontier and moving from one gold strike or other mineral rush to another. And in 1884, she started performing with Wild West shows.
She had at least one child, a daughter named Jessie, and was later married to Jessie's likely father, Bill Steers, in 1885. It is possible that she had other children, and she also described other men as her husband, but the marriage to Bill Steers is really the only one that's documented.
Her life seems to have really gone downhill after the disappearance of her husband and the death of her sister, both of which happened in 1888. She continued on in the same pattern as before. She was still traveling and drinking and finding work where she could. But it all became just a whole lot darker and less apparently fun. It's not really clear where her daughter was during a lot of this time, and her excessive drinking was really starting to take a toll on her health and just her ability to take care of herself.
Following the panic of 1893, Calamity Jane apparently helped guard an engine that miners were trying to commandeer so they could join the Coxey's Army protest march to Washington, D.C. A picture of this is one of the surviving photos of her.
This was a protest march where out-of-work laborers from all over the West and Midwest, like thousands of them, marched on Washington to protest. In October of 1895, she briefly went back to Deadwood with her daughter, Ann Clinton Burke, who she was describing as her husband. The following year, she went on tour as a performer with a traveling museum. And it was for this tour, to kind of promote her and promote the tour, that her autobiography was ghostwritten, which is why it is so heavily embellished and sometimes flatly fictional.
Once this tour was over, she kept traveling, trying to make a living through appearances and autographs, but her health really started to suffer as a result of a life of alcoholism.
For a little while, she traveled east, and she appeared at the Pan American Exposition in New York in July and August of 1901. Afterwards, she joined the Cummins Indian Congress. This was another traveling show that was modeled after Buffalo Bill's Wild West show. But whereas Buffalo Bill's show was focused kind of on the, quote, cowboy end of things, the Cummins Indian Congress was more focused on various Native American tribes. Calamity's role was kind of an Old West character.
Before long, she wanted to go west again. So she borrowed money from Buffalo Bill Cody, who she knew from briefly performing in his show, for her tickets. And she wound up in South Dakota, where she stayed through the winter of 1902. And then she resumed traveling, in failing health, making her way back to the Black Hills and again to Deadwood.
In July of 1903, she became ill and she refused to see a doctor. When a friend finally called a doctor for her, she refused his care. She started to tell people that she was dying, and she did die on August 1st, 1903. She was buried next to Wild Bill Hickok. It's a little unclear whether that was what she asked for or whether people thought that would make a good tourist attraction. The name on the gravestone is Mrs. M.E. Burke, Calamity Jane.
And if you're wondering what happened with the Black Hills, fighting between the Army and the Sioux and their allies continued, including the Battle of Little Bighorn in June of 1876, which was the site of Custer's last stand. In 1877, the U.S. government reclaimed the Black Hills land previously set aside for the Sioux. This eventually made it to the Supreme Court in the United States versus Sioux Nation of Indians. In an 8-1 decision, the court upheld a previous Court of Claims decision that the Sioux were entitled to $17.1 million, which the Sioux actually refused, wanting instead to have the Black Hills as they had been promised. Debate over this whole thing continues, with a United Nations human rights investigator recommending the return of various Native American lands, including the Black Hills, in 2012.
It's kind of I wanted to make sure to include that, since we only included a portion of this Black Hills story, and it seemed like at the end of the episode was probably where it would fit the best.
Makes sense to me. Do you have a bit of listener mail for us?
I do. I'm going to start, though, with a very brief correction. After I find my listener mail. In our recent episode about the child migrant program in Great Britain, we misidentified Kevin Rudd as the premier of Australia when he was really the prime minister. I would like to thank The Guardian for having that 100% wrong in the article that I was using as a source, which is a source that I thought would know what it was talking about in terms of, like, leaders of countries. I don't know.
You know, everybody has a day when they use the wrong word.
Yeah. I started clicking on things to be like, did they have it wrong everywhere? And no, literally the next sentence after the one that I was in the article that I use as a source links to another article on The Guardian where it's right. So clearly some people there know what's true. I have an email from Jess, and it answers a question that you and I had talked about in our episode on Dr. Virginia Apgar about why doctors were so focused on the mothers and not on the babies before Virginia Apgar made it clear to everybody that they needed to look at the babies.
I'm waiting for you to say it because you love that phrase so much.
Just look at the baby. Jess says, hi, ladies. In your recent podcast on Virginia Apgar, you wonder about the focus on maternal health over infant health in early 20th century medicine. Edward Shorter talks about this historically shifting focus in his book, A History of Women's Bodies. He points to the significant danger of childbearing for mothers who are already past the treacherous years of childhood mortality and therefore likelier to survive generally as the reason for the maternal bias in early medicine. He also suggests, however, a shifting focus toward fetal outcome has been taking place recently, sometimes to the detriment of mothers. As with all women's medicine, the social attitudes of the time often combine with knowledge to form best practice, and it can be difficult to reckon the choices of others, even in the not-so-distant past. Thanks for all you do, and thanks for all the medical topics, the LGBTQ history, and the stuff relating to disabilities. Deaf President Now is my all-time fave episode. Cheers, Jess. Thank you, Jess.
Indeed.
We sort of thought probably things along those lines were why there was such a focus on the mothers. I did not really think about the progressive shift to the outcome for babies that I think we have definitely seen it even in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
More and more focus on baby's health and even fetal health rather than mother's health.
Yes.
Yes. So, if you would like to write to us about this or any other podcast, we are at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/MissedInHistory and on Twitter at MissedInHistory. Our Tumblr is missedinhistory.tumblr.com and we're on Pinterest at pinterest.com/MissedInHistory. We have a Spreadshirt store at missedinhistory.spreadshirt.com where you can get t-shirts and iPhone cases and stuff like that. If you would like to learn more about what we have talked about today, come to our parent company's website. That's howstuffworks.com. Put the words Calamity Jane in the search bar. You will find two different things that are very contrary to one another. One is 10 most famous nurses in history. The other is 12 renowned women of the Wild West. You can do that at howstuffworks.com, or you can come to missedinhistory.com, which is our website. You will find show notes, which is where we correct things like our thing about Kevin Rudd, ideally, usually like the day the episode came out. Also an archive of all the episodes we've ever done. Lots of cool stuff. So you can do all that and a lot more at howstuffworks.com or missedinhistory.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forest, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.